You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, everybody. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. My name is Dan Johnson, and I'm running solo today. This was supposed to be an antler up session. However, my good buddy over there, Jeremy, he said to me, "Hey, dude, I got this opportunity. I want to take my kid camping." I said, "Go do it, dude. Go do it. Go have fun." And kind of a spur of the moment thing. And we got a one thing that I've started to realize at my age, you know, I'm getting ready to turn 45 here in November. And it's just like these moments, if you don't do them, they're not going to happen. So I am in the stage of my life where I'm going to be pulling the trigger on a lot of things, especially when it comes to my kids. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to be wasteful with my time or my money or my business. But what I'm saying is, like, if I get the opportunity to spend a little extra time doing something that might be inconvenient for me, but awesome for the kids, I'm going to do it, man. And that includes sports and coaching. Dude, it's crazy. If you want to have your kid in a sport and they fall in love with it, like my boys kind of have with baseball recently, I just want to give them the opportunity. And, you know, I'm not even pressuring them. They just want to go do it all the time. And I feel like that's kind of how I was when I was a kid. And so I'm going to allow them to play baseball as much as they want. And just this last weekend, literally 3 days ago, Saturday, I believe, whenever I'm recording this, Saturday was the last. It was an all-star baseball game that my boy got nominated to. Now we're done with baseball until probably next week, where he is going to be participating in fall ball. And that's 2 days fall baseball, which is going to be, one practice throughout the week. And then outside of the practice, there's going to be a game on Saturday morning. It's low key, but I'm also coaching 2 football teams, right? I'm coaching my oldest son's red zone flag football team. Those practices are going to be like Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then I think I'm going to have my youngest son, I'm coaching his flag football team too. And that's going to be Mondays and Wednesdays. I'm going to have to make it Mondays and Wednesdays. So just fucking nonstop, dude, nonstop. I looked at the mirror today and I just look tired and I look old because I'm pushing myself. You know, I don't want to sound like a pussy, but I'm going right now. I am foot on the gas as far as schedule and time. And, I finally started getting back in the gym again after baseball season was over, because instead of going to the gym, I was taking my kids to the batting cages and playing catch with them and taking them to the swimming pool. And so that meant that I was giving up my gym time for them. And then I was having to work later into the evenings based off of what, you know, however much time I had left. So again, do not regret that shit at all. I am excited to be spending as much time, and I'm lucky, man, with the position that I have in life, creating my own business and being extremely flexible in that stuff, I'm just really happy that I have the opportunity to do this. You know, you look back 20, 30 years ago, with our parents, like however old you are, or maybe you're in your 60s or something like that. And you're like, dude, I had to go to a location every single day. My wife works from home. I work from home, and, we get to do the little extra things like eat lunch with them. Go outside and play catch. I mean, shit, last night, me and my boy, we played catch until almost 9 o'clock at night with a baseball in the street, under the street lights. And that's something, I don't know if he'll remember it, but that's something that's the kind of stuff that I'm going to remember for a very long time. So, I'm pretty happy about that. What else? This is the bullet point of the show where I talk about updates and I'm updating people about what's going on in my world. Finally, I got trail cameras out on one farm, and I now have, I didn't put my lithium batteries in one of the cameras, because I didn't have time. I should have taken time to get the lithium batteries. But I set the cameras out. I put four cameras out. I have a river bottom farm. So two of the cameras do not get cell service. The other two do. One of them's operating perfectly. The other one has had a horse in front of it the entire time. And I'm getting literally hundreds and hundreds of pictures of horses and deer in front of my trail camera. And of course, now the battery is dying. I bet you I've had in probably close to, and it's probably a settings thing, but I'm getting thousands of pictures a day, it seems like, of this damn horse who's just standing in front of my camera, and he's eating the mineral that I dropped for the deer. This deer, or this horse, is probably 30 plus years old, and I'm just kind of waiting for, sounds bad, but I'm waiting for him to die so I don't have that problem anymore. But the bad part is, once that horse is out, they're probably just going to move cattle back into that pasture, and I'll have the same problem with cattle, but it is what it is. But I have it out. I've gotten some okay deer on the camera. I got one who looks like a 4-year-old, but he's not very impressive in the antlers. So who knows what's going to happen with that. I have one buck on my mind that I'm hoping shows up at some point throughout the course of the next 10, you know, between now and Hardhorn. He's run that property for like 3 years now. And, I'm hoping that he's back. He shows back up at some point. We are in on the farm, and I've talked about this on other episodes. We're in a corn year. So typically corn year where my cameras are at produces less deer right now for one reason. And it's because the deer aren't really eating the corn right now. Now that will shift when they come Hardhorn. The corn dries out, the soybeans are in a state of change, and they're off the beans. They come back to the corn. They come back to the thick areas. Once the corn and the beans start to come out in October, then the timber starts to flood with deer. And that's when this buck tends to show up more regular. So last year, because it was beans, he was here in velvet, and I got some decent pictures of him. But this year he's a no-go. So far, and maybe he's dead. Maybe he's just in a little different pocket. Maybe I'll catch him on one of my river bottom cameras. Who knows? But, it's corn year. So for me, corn year equals less deer in the summertime, but more deer coming, in the fall because of all the corn that's left on the ground. And, that just seems to be the crop rotation that I've noticed. So cameras are out. This Thursday, I plan on going to the my far away farm. I'll just call it my far away farm. It's going to probably be a 6-hour round trip, depending on how fast I can drive. The last time I went to that farm and I tried to cram it all into a day, I got a speeding ticket, $180. driving way too fast. And there was a sheriff, old Smokey, sitting right there. And he's just like, where are you going so fast? And I just said, I'm going to check trail cameras. And he goes, oh, okay, well, here's a ticket for $180. Just slow down. And I'm like, okay, cool. And so it took me probably 30 minutes longer to get to this spot than I usually do. I'm safe. I just like to drive fast, right? If you're not first, you're last. So there's that. I think that's about it as far as updates. Man, I need to get my bow out and start shooting it more. My target is sitting in the garage. My bow is sitting in the garage. This week is kind of transition week for me from summer activities to fall activities. I'll tell you this, October 25th is the day that all of the kids go back to school. Once that happens and they're back to school, they're away all day, I have the ability to get back into the swing of things real heavy and focus more on the business, focus more on the hunting and the preparation. I have an opportunity to go to Nebraska this year. I have to wait to see when leftover tags go on sale, but the goal is to possibly go on like a very early season whitetail hunt in Nebraska, and then a month later go to South Dakota on all that stuff. So, okay. A couple things that I want to talk about real quick. And, I don't know. I just wanted to talk a little bit about my feelings, if that makes sense. So recently I have been called out by another person. And I'm sure you guys know who it is. This person doesn't like hunting media, thinks that hunting media, whether it's magazines, whether it's podcasters, whether it's people who have television shows, whether it's YouTubers, quote unquote influencers, they think that their opportunities are being ruined, along with several other people being ruined by the promotion of hunting through media. And I'll be honest, I can't help but agree with them, right? However, we live in a time, a digital time, where people talk about everything, right? Restaurants, you know, little mom and pop stores like restaurants, let's say. Once the word gets out about them, people are going to want to go experience their food, right? But I get it. There's a natural resource at play here that's very vulnerable to hunting pressure. It's very vulnerable to drought and weather conditions. And so if all these things add up, people who are used to hunting specific areas of a state, like let's just use the West, for example, there's a flood of people going to the West to hunt. And now you have all of these residents or non-residents who have been in certain areas for a period of time. Now they're starting to see more trucks in there, and it sucks, man. And I will even use the experience for Iowa, where I live. I live in an area of the state. I was raised in an area of the state where they're big buck counties, right? All south, pretty much south of Interstate 80, all the way to Interstate 35 and even 50, 60, 70 miles further west of that. And that's the mecca of the whitetail world. And every time that I have lost a property, I have not been able to really replace it. And the reason is because there are people who are non-residents who are buying up this land. And I don't want to say hoarding the natural resource, even though that's really the outcome of it. And so I talk about it, right? I mean, that's just the state of the world that we live in. And we have to accept some of these things. We can fight, you know, and we can do what I recommend to anybody in a democracy like the United States. If there's something that you do not like and you do not like it, well, here's what you do. You gather a people a group of people who have like-minded thoughts as you. You get a big enough group of people and you go to your elected officials and you say, we want something changed, or we are seeing a trend that we do not like and we want it changed to benefit us. All right. Meanwhile, on the other side, there's always another side. There's a group of people who like, we want to go experience, let's say, a Western hunt, and we want there to be plenty of opportunities for non-residents or people who may live on a different part of the country. So it is a catch-22. It is a double-edged sword of that. I mean, what I get out of this is people just don't want non-residents hunting their property, hunting the West. But at the same time, you have this double-edged sword where non-resident funding in some scenarios pays for a lot of the, you know, pays the budget for the Department of Natural Resources. Huge, huge intakes of money from non-residents. And so there's this balance. There's no perfect answer. And I just feel like instead of blaming people for certain things, and yes, it happens. I mean, yes, these people are right. Yes. A guy goes in who has a huge following and he says, hey, we are in this state. We are here. We are here. Or if they're burning spots, I get it, man. That's not cool. But I will tell you this, are we just not supposed to share or talk about our passion, right? I understand there's money in it, but there's money on both sides, right? Like I want to be fair, but fairness comes in a kind of equality maybe. And so it's really frustrating for like, hunting is my passion. I love talking about it. I've been podcasting for 10 years. I'm not just, this isn't just a fling for me. I have done it for 10 fucking years. And so when I go online, and it really pissed me off, when I go online and I read a comment where like, oh, just another noob who thinks that, you know, they should start a podcast. Well, I've been podcasting for 20 years and it literally took all of my energy not to comment, go fuck yourself in a response to that, to those comments. Right. And, you know, people are saying, well, dude, that might jeopardize some of your sponsorships. I'll tell you this. If they haven't been jeopardized yet, I feel like the people who sponsor me are, know enough about me and know enough about the podcast to the point where, you know, they understand who I am and what I say. So, I mean, just look at the episode I did with the guy who messed with my trail cameras, right? That was a blatant retaliation on the guy who did that. And I just basically cussed him out for 30 minutes, called him a bitch and then moved on. So, they're right. You know, they're right. Everybody has the right to do whatever it is that they want to do. And it, as long as it follows legal guidelines, you don't have to support it, but that's why you're seeing tags in the West, you know, like over the counter Colorado tags, they're gone. Nebraska over the counter, that's gone. Several states used to be, every year draws. That's gone. You know, now you're starting to get into a preference point system or, you know, go lotteries and things like that. And is what it is. That is the direction that it has gone. And it's almost like, oh God, it's just about being greedy and money. Well, if you got money, what are you supposed to do? You're going to do what you love. I mean, just imagine if I won the lottery or my business was successful enough to just have a big pile of cash, I would probably buy a farm. It would probably displace other hunters who hunt there, and me and my family would hunt it. And so that's what I'd do. And at the same time, it's just like, access is getting harder everywhere. in the country. It's because, and here's the number. Here is what I think is happening. I don't think that we are gaining more hunters. I don't think there's more hunters on the landscape, because depending on where you look for your data, some data shows decline and some data shows an increase. But what I'm thinking, there's two things that are happening here. One, you have less hunters in total, but more hunters pulling multiple tags for multiple species in multiple states. That's the one thing. So like I am responsible for, like last year, I'm responsible for a tag in Kansas. I was responsible for a tag in South Dakota. And of course, my Iowa tags as a resident. So I was responsible for three tags that other people did not get. All right. Well, if you're an Iowa resident, you always get a buck tag, but not necessarily a doe tag in whatever county that you're in. So what I would do is I'm responsible for those three tags. And sometimes that pulls away from other people, right? So now you have more people hunting, or less hunters, but more of those hunters hunting more states. The other thing that I think is happening on in the private land game, right, is acres per hunter is going up. So back in the day, let's just say 20 years ago, one hunter would take up, I'm just going to guess one hunter would take up 50 acres. All right. Now that same hunter, based off of leasing, based off of land sales, the people with the money, they want to, you know, pay to have a better experience. That is now going, one hunter is taking up 100 acres. That's just like a rough average here. That's just like just a guess, right? That's just some made up numbers that I made up in order for people to get the idea here. So now you multiply that across the United States, especially in the whitetail world, you know, the Midwest all the way to the East, South, Texas, you know, everybody says the same thing. It's harder to get access to private ground. It's also harder to find a low pressure spot in the on private. Well, it's because you have multiple, so you take hunters per acre, right? Or acres per hunter is going up, and then you have hunters per tag, or tags per hunter is also going up. So you're automatically going to feel less access, and you're going to feel less access and feel more pressure because of those two basically made up statistics. All right. And so, and that's why you're seeing people and complain to the state agencies, and the state agencies are now racking up, you know, prep, turning things into draws and lotteries and preference points and things like that. So, what's going to happen on all of this, though, is I feel like we're going to see the levee break, so to speak, and we're going to see a return to better hunting experiences because of that. And maybe you're not going to be able to hunt out of state at your favorite spot every single year anymore. Maybe you're going to have to wait every other. I mean, Kansas, like I remember, was it 10 years ago, you could probably get a tag in Kansas every single year, and now you're sitting on 3 years. Southern Iowa used to be once every 3 years, and now we're sitting on six. So we're seeing point creep, but what's going to happen is the people who are dedicated to the point system are going to be able to, like, people are just, it's just human nature. Things get hard, people quit. And so when things get hard, in Colorado, I had a really good conversation with my buddy Adam Parr on the Western Rookie podcast this week. When things get hard, people are going to quit. And so when people have to start jockeying for preference points and stuff like that, there's going to be some point creep initially. But I think like people are just going to be like, screw that. I don't want to do this anymore. And there's going to be some fall off. And it sucks because those people, you know, we're having higher opportunities. And I guess a lot of it also comes down to what are you looking for, right? I think a lot of this comes with, yes, there is the experience and the pressure part of it, but also the resource part of it, which is, was there drought in an area that affected the deer population? Was there winter kill? Was it truly hunters had more, so much pressure and so much more success? And you add all these things up together and it could really affect the natural resource. So, man, it's a very complicated issue. I don't have the answers for it. All I know is that there's a lot of people trying their best to figure it out. And sometimes they're, what they feel is right, might, other people might call bullshit on. So I don't know. It, that's the world we live in for everything though, right? So I just wanted to voice my little, I wanted to blurt some of that shit out. So that's it. That's all I wanted to talk about as far as this intro is concerned. I do want to send a huge shout out to all of the partners that make the Nine Finger Chronicles possible. If you're looking for a really good broadhead, make sure you're checking out Wasp Archery. Go to wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. A lot of their heads are still manufactured in the United States with a quality design and quality materials. And that's why I love Wasp Archery, man. So next on the list is Vortex Optics. Stand by because Vortex is coming out with some new products early August. Here, I've been told that I cannot talk about the product that I currently have on my desk here until August 7th or 8th or something like that. And it's badass, man. It's a very efficient product. So think about it. And I'm sure you can guess what it is. So Vortex Optics has a huge lineup of red dots, spotting scopes, rifle scopes, binoculars, range finders, golf range finders. Their sunglasses are badass, and they also have a pretty kick-ass apparel line too. So vortexoptics.com. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. I drove an hour and 20 minutes to get to my main farm that I've hunted for almost 20 years now. I have my batteries, I have my cameras, and oops, my dumbass forgot all of my mock scrape kits sitting in a box because I got distracted by the kids. Then I left, and then I pulled into the farm an hour and a half later, and I look back and I'm like, I left my mock scrape kit stuff, so I didn't update any mock scrapes. And that kind of pissed me off, but that's what happens when your brain is fried from being a dad. So the next farm I go to, which is going to be probably this Thursday, I'm going to do the same trail camera work. I'm probably going to set up a tree stand. And then I'm also going to try and find, I'm going to go ahead and try to get my mock scrapes set out. I'm going to bring my weed eater. I'm going to tear up the ground. I'm going to add the grave digger scrape mate. I'm going to do my preorbital gel on my rope-a-dope kits. And, I'm going to get the farm set up. I'm going to pair it with a Reveal trail camera and it's good to go, right? Great for taking inventory. So go to codebluesense.com, take a look at their real and synthetic deer urines, take a look at their scent elimination products, their mock scrape kits, all of that stuff. So they do have a discount code for you, and that's NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal trail cameras. Their new Ultra has come out and it sounds like it's been a hit for a lot of you guys. I've talked to a lot of you guys and you're loving it, man. There's so many new features that you guys need to take advantage of. And you pair that with their app and their mapping software, dude, it's pretty badass, man. It's, you're starting to see a lot of crossover with these trail camera companies who are also starting to become mapping companies as well. And now you have this one-stop shop for mapping and your trail cameras. And, it's starting to expand. And I had a conversation with Greg from Reveal, what was it, like 4 weeks ago now, about their new Ultra and where the company's going. And they're going to be doing some crazy things with technology here coming up that is going to blow your mind. Take that how you want to take it. I know some of you guys are all for cell cams. Some of you guys are not for cell cams, but it's one of those things that it's going to, It's going to take that everything to the next level, right? It's going to expand the range of the camera in multiple different facets. But go check out the new Ultra, all the capabilities and the functions of that camera over at tacticam.com/cameras. And the new-ish 3.0s are out as well. So go take a look at those. And last but not least, I still have full Sneak gear. It's still a company. If you're watching this on YouTube, this is my shirt. It's the Gobble Gobble Boom t-shirt. I still have those in inventory. I haven't set it up yet, but stand by for a big sale that's coming here so I can make inventory for some new Nine Finger Chronicles t-shirts and some new Full Sneak Gear t-shirts. So there's that. Now, we're going to have a little bit of a moment of silence so I can catch my breath. Drink some lukewarm coffee. I love coffee. I probably drink too much of it. All right. Today's topic, and I don't know how long we're going to talk about this, but cutting the wind. That was a long intro, and I'm sorry if you came here for the title and then you had to listen to me rant for 30 minutes. Cutting the wind. There's definitely an art to cutting the wind. And first, I think we should talk about what is the definition of cutting the wind. To me, cutting the wind is having your scent cone go the direction of where deer are coming. And basically, if the deer came, I don't know, like, let's just say I'm facing north on a tree stand. And I feel like I'm on a trail where the deer are coming from the north, and they're gonna walk right by my tree stand or within shooting distance of it to the west, right? I want my wind to be blowing out of the south, maybe southwest, and just slightly missing them. And this has been one of those things where if the deer then decides to walk maybe off a trail or lower in elevation, you're screwed. But you set up based off of a ton, like you set up based off trail, maybe some sign, maybe a curve in the trail that runs through a different terrain feature. And basically you're just missing. They're just missing. They feel comfortable coming in because the wind is to their face and your scent is just to the right of them. And I really do try to do this a lot, right? But it took me 10 years to figure it out. No joke. 10 years on specific farms to figure out specific wind directions, specific thermals, thermal pulls, afternoon hunts, morning hunts, not just the strength of the wind, but the inconsistencies that could be in the wind, inconsistencies in thermals on a cloudy day, and how all of that stuff works. And it took me basically 10 years to put a method together. And it's not something that I'm going to say, sit here and say that you should do, but it's something that I have personally, it's a method that I've personally kind of taken into account when I step into the woods. And it's just part of my thought process at this point. Okay. And so what I want to do is I want to talk about a couple scenarios where cutting the wind would be really beneficial to someone if they can do it right. All right. Now, here are a couple of scenarios where all of this matters. Cutting the wind matters. Thermals matter. Wind direction matters. Okay. Let's say, like, elevation, right? Elevation is going to play a role. Are the deer, do you expect the deer to be coming high to low, maybe in a river bottom scenario where they're on some ridges or that lead up into big timber and all the farm ground is low? Or is it thick river bottom and they're coming up to a food source and they're going low, high? Okay. These are things. Is it going to be a morning hunt? Is it going to be an afternoon hunt? Like, this is how my brain kind of operates, especially with rising and sinking thermals and what the scenario is here. All right. So I'm going to go through a scenario here. And I want you guys to be patient with me here because I'm going to try to be as extremely detailed with my words because you're listening to this and you're not being able to see it. I did do some stuff like this on what they call a whiteboard. I did something called Whiteboard Wednesdays, I think I called it, where I basically went in and I took a whiteboard. I drew some topo lines on it of some of the places that I hunt, and I shared some of my tree stand locations, why they're in these areas and when I hunt them. So if you want a little bit more detail on some of that stuff, go to the Sportsman's Empire YouTube channel, and then you can go to the Nine Finger Chronicles playlists. And I believe they're all there. So go take a look at that. All right. So I want to envision, and we'll switch it here in a second. I want to envision a simple ridge, okay? And this ridge is high ground. I'm going to write it down on my piece of paper here. High ground is on the north side, okay? Low ground, and maybe it's leading to a river or just a river bottom or just lower terrain. Low ground is south, okay? And there's just a ridge that runs high ground north to low ground south. Now we have to put a hypothetical food source on the map here. And I want this food source to be, for right now, I want it to be, I'm envisioning a river bottom or a big draw or a big block of timber on the bottom, and it's going up to an ag food source or a destination food plot or something, but the food is high ground. Okay. Now, we know that the deer are bedding maybe at the point of this ridge, or they're maybe even bedded down in this hypothetical river bottom or big valley or something like this in some thickness. Maybe it's off to the west side of the point. Maybe it's off to the east side of the point, but they're bedding on this point and they are coming from the south to the north to this destination food source. Maybe you have a trail camera on the field edge and you're seeing consistent deer movement there. Maybe you have another food source in like along the way. Maybe if there's some staging area, maybe it's a thick fence line where there's some woody browse in. I'm going to envision a staging area in this scenario. But let's say we know that they're going south and they're coming north. So cutting the wind means that we have to try to find what side of the ridge they're going to be coming up on. And that's where that's where we play accordingly, right? So in this scenario, I'm envisioning a northwest wind. Maybe it's this perfect pre-rut, post-front, cold front coming through. We have a northwest wind. And so the wind is blowing to the west. It's coming from the west over top of the ridge and blowing the leeward side would be the east side of this ridge. So I am expecting the deer travel and the deer movement to be on the east side, the leeward side coming over the top. And so they can smell what's coming over the top and they can see low ground to the east. Okay. So the deer travel is going to be on the east side of this ridge. And so how do I intercept this deer movement? Here's what I would do. Low ground, I would enter from the north on the low ground, and I would find where I feel the deer movement is coming from. And then as soon as I find the tree that I want to hop in, I am taking a 90-degree turn. So I'm walking south, I'm taking a 90-degree turn to the west, and I'm coming up and I'm going to sit on the east side of where I feel deer ter- deer movement will be. Okay. Now, if the wind shifts to west-northwest or straight west, dude, I'm in a perfect spot. If the wind shifts to the north-northwest, I'm still in a pretty good spot. Even if the wind shifts to straight north, I might still be in a good spot depending on the thermals and how they play. And the reason I'm to the east of this is so you have everything coming over top of this ridge. The wind's coming over top of the ridge. The deer are smelling everything. And even if they walk by you on this scenario, there's not a lot of chance that they're going to smell you. Once we get into the north-northwest, though, however, our scent is going to be just cutting this trail or to the north. It's just going to be cutting this trail. And the goal, the closer they actually get to your stand location, the safer it gets, actually. And because of this, the closer they get to your stand, the safer they get, the more opportunity you're going to have a shot. So if you see them way down there, they're going to, like, if it's way down there, your scent cone is expanding. Not only is it expanding, but it's also diluting. So they could smell you way downwind, and they could be like, man, what is that smell? It smells like a predator, but it's pretty diluted. It's not very close. Maybe I'll pop up on this ridge and they'll just chill a little bit. I've seen that happen. They don't necessarily bust out, but they chill a little bit and then they make their way up. However, that doesn't necessarily work with big mature whitetails who have been hunted before. That doesn't work. So this whole process is a very high risk for a very high reward type scenario. So what are the I'm doing this, let's say, on an afternoon hunt. I feel like I have bedding. I'm going to pop into the where transition meets staging. It's typically where I like to hunt. And that's tree stand is going to be right there, right on to the east side of a trail, working back up to that. Now, what are my thermals doing in a scenario like this? All right. My thermals are going to be on a, let's just say it's a bright, cloudy, high pressure day. Thermals are going to be kicking. And so now that scent cone in an afternoon hunt really starts to elevate, and it's going to elevate with the predominant wind direction. All right. It's going to elevate and it's going to go high. And there's a lot of times where if you play your cards right, that thermal will pull your scent high. And then even if they do get downwind of you, your thermals are pulling your scent high with a predominant wind, and it's kind of a Loctite area. So if you can have that now, if it's a cloudy day and your thermals are shifting, it's sunny for a little bit, thermals are rising, cold, and you can feel that thermal shift pull down, or it's a cloudy day and thermals never rise on this day. Maybe it's like misting, or it's a heavy humidity day and it's pulling everything down. Well, it's still going to follow the predominant wind direction. However, it's going to pull it down into the low terrain. And so the thing that you have to realize is, are deer crossing the low spot of the ridge that you are on? Are they crossing 200, 300 yards? If they are, you could get in trouble. But if you feel they're posted up on or bedded up on the point of this ridge, that should not be an issue for you. All right. So thermals, thermals don't just follow terrain low to high. Maybe in extreme scenarios like Colorado, Rocky Mountains, they do. But for the most part, in the Midwest, in whitetail country, thermals are following predominant wind direction and terrain. The only time you run into a really iffy situation would be on a south-facing slope, where you have a south-facing slope. You have a south wind with a rising thermal that, like, it could maybe get a little swirly, or if you're in low elevation on a south facing slope where the wind's coming over top and it starts to cycle down in there, that could be an issue. Or a really sunny day on a north facing slope where The majority of the north face is in, no, excuse me, south facing slope, on a north facing slope where a majority of the land mass is in shade for longer periods of time, and you're above the shade and you have a thermal pulling down, but you have a wind that is maybe coming from the south in this scenario and hitting, there's like this pool. And one thing that I've known is think of air like a layered cake. All right. You have the cool air that's on the bottom and you have the warmer air that's on top. So as the sun comes up and the day rises, that level of cool air sinks and sinks and sinks. And the this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Because the heavier, hotter air is on top of it, pushing it down, pushing it down, pushing it down. And, which is crazy because then the hot air rises, but the temperature of that colder air is changing, and it's changing and it's lifting, it's creating more hot air. So it's lifting it and reducing the amount of, cool air. And there's a couple places, man, where deer, they have figured out that the safe place for them is right in the middle of this layer, and they will walk these ridge systems right in that line where you have the, it's almost like it's a pendulum. It's almost like a tide, actually. And if you've ever found one of these spots, you drop some milkweed or some of these synthetic fibers, and you just watch them float right in the air. If it's a light enough fiber or a light enough, you'll see it come up and then it goes back down. And then throughout the morning, it just never comes back up. And you'll even see it as the day goes on and the sun starts to set. You will see the reverse effect of that, where the cool air starts to come. Now, I don't know if any of you, I'm sure you have, you get out of your tree stand and you have to go across the valley to get back to your truck. And so you drop down and it's already really cool there. If you stop for a second, you can feel the thermals pulling down to the lowest, part of elevation. And thermals act a lot like water in a way, where what I found is, imagine me putting a garden hose, like a giant garden hose or a fire hydrant, on one of these ridge systems. If I point it in the direction, in a specific direction, and I turn it on full blast, where's that water going to run to? It's going to run to the lowest possible spot. And then it's going to hit an area where it's going to pool until that pooled air overflows from whatever area it's at. And then it then gets distributed to, again, the lowest part, and then it works its way out. So, that starts to sound really complicated, but these are next level tactics. So once you think about that, where is this scent going once it gets past me? Or once it gets past this deer movement, then you might be able to think more of like chess instead of checkers, and be able to take that next thought process, like, okay, I'm in a good spot, but what are my thermals doing downwind? Are the deer coming? Are they going to cross that pool at all? And if they're not, well, shit, that's awesome. Then that's something you don't need to worry about. But I have a couple stands where I do have to worry about that, because they're crossing downwind of me, so like really far away, or the thermals are pulling and curving around into a low spot. And that low spot could be at the end of that point where deer are maybe crossing another ridge to come up. just things to think about. Outside of that, now we flip this scenario, okay? And we have, and I want to flip this scenario, and we're going to have food high again, all right? And we're going to have betting low at the point again. And north is high, south is low. And this time, the wind direction is going to be coming from the north, northeast. Maybe it's going to be coming from the northeast, right? And it's going to be doing the opposite. So it's going to be coming across the food source, or excuse, across the ridge. And I envision on this, the deer are bedded on the east point of that ridge, and they're going to work their way up on the west side of the ridge to the food source and to the staging area. So again, I am going to enter low on the west side of that ridge, the lowest property or part of the elevation. And then I'm 90 degree turning uphill. I'm walking straight uphill, and I'm setting up my stand or my saddle on the west side of that trail. And so as on an afternoon hunt, as the sun starts to go down, in the west, let's see, I'm going to have, basically uphill thermals until it goes behind the next ridge or whatever's happening there. So the deer are going to work their way up. I'm going to be on the west side of that ridge. And even if the wind comes out of the north, my thermals should be kicking along with the predominant wind on an afternoon hunt. My thermals stay high until they don't. And then the predominant wind should pull my thermals low, or in the wind match with the thermals should pull it low. And we know deer don't walk. They don't travel on the highest point, and they don't travel on the lowest point. They travel somewhere in between. And then I should be safe. I'm cutting the wind. My only issue is then if it starts to get anything out of the west on this scenario, then you're starting to get in trouble, because your scent will then be crossing the line of movement these deer are taking, right? And so that's where you have to really be careful for shifting winds. Now, again, the closer that they get to you, the better, because then that scent cone does not have, it's like a triangle, right? You are the point of the triangle, and then the wider part of the triangle is literally where you're going. And thermals can play a role in keeping that narrow. Consistent winds can play a role in keeping that narrow. Right after, where the winds are shifting, right after a front goes through, or maybe the entire day before a front comes and you have some inconsistent winds where things want to start coming out of the east and they're shifting south to north, and you have these major, you know, 90 post 90 wind direction shifts. And those are hard to cut the wind on. And that's one thing that I will say is I do this when we have multiple hours of consistent winds. I tend to not cut the wind in a scenario where I am, where we have shifting winds. That becomes too risky. Or when we have maybe a scenario where, God, I know a deer's in here. I know he comes out on the north wind. North, northwest, northeast. I don't roll the dice when we are, unless I get up to an area where we have more of a consistent, maybe the trail turns for a little bit and he heads to the east or to the west. And then I try to find those corners of that trail split or something like that, that allows me to have more of an area. But again, I try to do the cut the wind type stuff on consistent winds and consistent thermals. And that sometimes that can be hard to do because weather tends to change all the time. Right now in the next scenario here. And so I envision this being an afternoon hunt, right? Going to destination food. Now, if we flip this and we have, let's just do it again with, let me find a clean sheet of paper here. We have north is food, right? South is the edge, and that's bedding. All right. And let's say this is a morning hunt now. All right. So the morning hunt, we want on them returning to bed, this isn't really even an issue because they're going to be coming with the wind back to their bedding areas if it's still in north, anything out of the north. The only thing that you have to do is if it's a run and gun, I'd be on that point somewhere. If you feel like you know where they're at, just to the north of where you envision that bedding area is. And if it's a north wind, all your scent's blowing off the point. And unless these deer have traveled a long distance and they take a big J hook back up into their beds, then that could be a little bit of an issue. But if you feel they're coming right back from that destination food source down that wind, traveling with the wind at their back and their eyes to the bedding, which happens a lot, right? Deer don't always travel with their nose in the wind, right? If they would do that, they would just travel the same direction for days. And so we know that doesn't happen because deer stay in the same area. And we've all seen it. So that's not too big of an issue if they're coming back. So now what you're doing is you're taking these same principles and you're flipping them for morning hunts. For me, I love the morning hunt and cutting the wind better because if they're coming back to a food source, let's just say they're coming back and now I have a south wind, right? Well, they're not going to come back to that point anyway because they're probably going to go to a different bedding area where my guess is, so we have food high, and that's on the north side. And then we have a valley or low spot or a draw to the left and to the west and the east, and the ridge runs north-south. Well, in the north wind, they're bedding at the point. Well, on a south wind, I can see them bedding at the point of the draw, so closer to the food source up on the east and west where it comes into maybe the field edge. They're going to bed closer to that. Or they might be bedding closer to staging, or they might be bedding in an area where they're getting an entire drainage, or hell, they might be even bedded across the valley on the opposite side ridge so they can see where they're going to be going with the wind at their back on the opposite side point, if that makes sense. So you go north is food, south is the point of the ridge, and then you go all the way down to the lowest spot, and then now you start going back up to the opposite side point of the opposite side ridge, and that's where more than likely the deer are going to be bedded. So again, very...
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Very technical here of what I'm trying to, you know, talk to you guys about. But really what it comes down to is knowing what your thermals are doing in a morning hunt or an afternoon hunt, knowing where the deer are going to be coming from through trail camera data or historical deer movement, and then putting your deer stand on the downwind side of the trail on a very aggressive wind direction that is blowing just parallel to that. That deer gets downwind a little bit, it's over, you're screwed. The other thing that I like to do here, and this is the last thing I think I'm going to talk about today, is I don't really know what to call it. Let's say you have the same scenario. North is high ground, south is low ground, and the deer are coming south up the ridge and they're going to food. Okay. But now you have a property boundary. And so now you have a line. Let's say the property boundary is on the east side, so you cannot access it from the east side. So now what I would do is, instead of dropping, and let's say we have a northwest wind, right? So northwest wind comes across, the deer are going to be on the east side of the ridge and they're going to be cruising up. So in order for me to get to this, because I can now not access it from the east on the low ground, I'm going to be doing something I call ridge hopping. And I only do this in the timber where I feel it's thick enough to where they cannot see me. So I will start high and I'll come to the low spot and I will do my 90 degree turn. So hypothetically, my scent could really be getting pushed down to where they're bedding. But typically what happens is I will do this early enough in a day and far enough from where I feel the deer are bedding that even if they do smell me, the potency of my scent is not going to scare them so bad at like 20, 30 yards. This is more of a 100, 150, maybe even more yard move. So maybe they even smell me. And I walk down to the low and then I hop across the ridge. I set up my tree stand still on the east side of the trail working up to the food, but I do it closer to the food, closer to the staging area and far away from the bedding. And I feel like deer will pop their head up. They'll smell it. They won't move because I'm far enough away and my scent is diluted enough to where it's not spooking them. They're aware of me. But then I get into the tree stand, I set up, and by the time I walk through, I'm not standing there with my scent blowing right into their bed. I'm literally just crossing, and my scent goes down to them for just a moment, right? Maybe however long it takes me to hop this ridge, they smell me, I get set up on the east side, and then I'm there early enough and long enough to where they calm down. They calm down. They're like, maybe you're in a farm country where there's people walking around or, you know, agriculture and, you know, there's trucks and farmers and things like that. I would do that. And they know you're there, or they at least think you're there for a small period of time. And then you walk through, your scent stops going to them. And then they're like, okay, well, I don't smell this dude anymore. He must have just passed by. That's pretty aggressive. That's a pretty aggressive move, but I actually do it quite a bit. And I'm not doing it at 20, 30, 40 yards, 50 yards. I'm doing it at 100, 150, maybe even a little bit further. And then I cross over the ridge. And then I set up on the east side. And it's now we're back to the same exact scenario as I was before. But again, this is access. So this is an aggressive access route that leads me to a northwest wind that's just cutting the trail, or a northwest wind that's cutting this trail, going back up. I'd like to pair it with an afternoon. So I'm on the east side of the ridge. And that means as soon as the sun starts to go down behind, I'm going to start getting shade and thermal pull down, which is going to help me even more. It's going to be pulling down and the deer are going to be walking right in front of me, right? That's just one scenario. This is how I cut the wind. This is how I play the thermals with cutting the wind, because I feel like there's times where you have some awkward thermals and they might be fighting that, you know, that layered cake scenario. They might be fighting the predominant wind. That is not good for cutting the wind. So if you have consistent thermals, you have consistent wind direction, that is the perfect, most ideal time to cut the wind. The other time that I would be careful with is like I said, fronts moving to and from and getting like cloudy days where it goes cold. You know, it's like it's cool behind the clouds and then it warms up when the clouds go by. Those are, again, some times where you could get some inconsistent thermal pulls, some highs, some lows. Because I feel my gut tells me that when you have a sunny day, the thermals are going to go with the wind direction. And if you have cooler days or you're in shade, then the thermals will pull with elevation. And so my note here, one thing that I wrote down here was think of pitches, like baseball pitches and your wind direction. So if you have a consistent wind on a sunny day, that's your fastball. It is a straight line. It's a straight line. It is one of those things where you're going to sit in a direction, you're in the sun, your wind is going to go that direction. Now, with a thermal pull, let's say on a cooler day, the wind is still going in the same direction, but now you have a curveball scenario because your thermals are pulling down to lower elevation. And so now you're starting to see this curve in your scent cone. And if you can figure out where to put your tree stand on the elevation, right? This, like I said, this is the part that has taken me 10 years to kind of figure out. Then you can find that area where the thermals are start to pull a little harder, where it starts to become shade faster. You set your tree stand on that corner of where you think that they're going. And you, that's on a cool thermal pull on an afternoon hunt, or maybe on a flip it and we're going to go from cool to high. And so it's pulling down as the deer are coming back to bed. But when it comes sunny, that's when the risk starts to pick up a little bit more. And it just becomes the perfect scenario, right? So I'll repeat myself one more time. Consistent winds, bright sunny days. Those are, and in the mornings and in the evenings, less cloud cover. Those are going to be your best days to cut the wind. Where you start to find risk is where you have fronts moving in and out. You have inconsistent winds, let's say that are going from southwest to southeast, or, you know, from west, like a western type, wind to an eastern type wind, if it's pre-front. And then you have cloudy skies where thermals could be pulling down and rising back and forth like a teeter totter, or like a kid on a trampoline, basically. And that can get a little bit iffy as well. So play around with your stand locations. I strongly suggest bringing some type of milkweed or synthetic fiber into the tree stand with you, and just every once in a while drop them. And then when a cloud comes over, drop another one and see what the difference is that and what they're doing with a specific wind direction. And you guys should feel this. Now, this is something that, have you ever felt on your neck or on your cheeks, the thermals rising on a cool morning? Maybe you're walking in and it's frost on the ground. You get into your tree stand. It's going to be a bright sunny day. It's real crunchy out. So it's like that perfect morning rut hunt, and you can feel, once the sun hits you, you can feel everything come up. Dude, those are Loctite days. Those are days where I'm going to be the most aggressive because the thermals are almost going straight up. And if there's any type of wind direction, it's going to be following that wind. So play around with this. It's not something that you're going to figure out overnight. It's something that took me a long period of time. And I got busted a lot. I mean, I got busted a lot from 2016 to 2006. You guys, it would be the best type of bloopers to see if there were such thing as hunting bloopers, going in and looking where I set up and looking at, like, just maybe on a map with X's and O's and say, this was your access route and this was your selected tree stand location. Here's the wind direction. It would be laughable because I had been busted so many times in that 10 years. But those lessons helped me figure out what works best for me. And that's the same thing that should happen for you. So good vibes in, good vibes out. Good luck this upcoming season. Make sure your gear is ready. Make sure your tree stands are inspected. Make sure you have a safety harness or a saddle or something like that that's going to allow you to be as safe as possible. Take your kids hunting, and we'll talk to you next week. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.